Hello and welcome to The Conspiracy Hour. This week, we are going to talk about the life and times of Gordon Novell, super spy, private investigator, a man from the shadow world, a tribute to a cold warrior, Gordon Novell, 1938 to 2012. 3 o'clock in the morning in a nursing home in Los Angeles, Gordon Novell left this world. Behind, he left a series of mysteries. Was he involved in the JFK assassination or not? Did he work for the CIA or did he not? One thing is for sure, Gordon Novell was flamboyant. And Gordon Novell knew how to promote Gordon Novell. Over the years, we became very close friends with Gordon. I could see through the crusty, rough exterior into a man who was interested in human rights, a man who believed that he could make a difference in the world, and dedicated his final years to the pursuit of free or cheap energy. He thought that energy would be coming from the UFO. Back engineering, he was convinced, had been done. And now this energy was sequestered by a conglomerate of oil company interests to keep it off the market. Gordon Novell was quite a private eye. He worked with us on several cases. His most illustrious client, I guess, was Ramsey Clark, the former Attorney General of the United States under the Carter administration. Gordon Novell will be cremated and then laid to rest beside his mother at a cemetery in Florida. Gordon Novell, a career and a life that is no more. To private investigator extraordinaire, Gordon Novell, may you rest in peace.
Questions and prospects with prospects really of a few answers is the best way I could sum up our tribute here to Gordon Novell today. Hi, I'm Jerry Pippin, and welcome to our show. I guess that would be the headline, if we had a headline for today's show. We're talking about Gordon Novell and his passing. We have quite a bit of information about it on our website at jerrypippin.com. And you can simply go over there and click on the links. There's a couple of links on the highlights window there on the homepage. The death of Gordon was not unexpected. He had been very ill. And it's still, you know, you're never ready for it. It came as a shock. He was 74 years old. Novell was still behaving like a cold warrior. And evidently, he had been that part of his life, earlier in his life at least. Been lots of hot spots around the world that Gordon's been involved in, the Bay of Pigs, the JFK assassination, being held by radicals in a Beirut jail while he was over there trying to free an American hostage. Those are just a few of the scrapes that Gordon Novell, private investigator, had endured over his life. I did not know Gordon early in his life, but even in his 60s when I first met him, he was full of vim and vigor, as we say here in Oklahoma. In an earlier interview, which is now part of our tribute to Novell, broadcast just a day after his death, Gordon discussed some of the events in his life. And a lot of it was interesting, and a lot of it was almost like out of a spy novel. But that's the way Gordon Novell lived his life. When we had an off-the-record conversation with him over the years, and we had many, we were aware that there was much more to tell. However, the Grim Reaper came for Gordon in the middle of the night in a nursing home in Los Angeles, California, taking him and his stories to the other side. Gordon was a son of the South. He loved New Orleans and Louisiana in particular, and never really left it in spirit, even though he lived on the West Coast for much of his life. He loved hanging out in Hollywood with the Hollywood crowd for many years. He was born in a show business heritage, and we're going to talk to his son, Sir Novell, about that in a little bit to find exactly what is happening there. You might be surprised about what is happening there. And Gordon spent his early years at the Pasadena Playhouse training for the big movie career that never happened. He was one step ahead of me. I always wanted to go to the Pasadena Playhouse. Later in my life, got a little older than when Gordon was at Pasadena Playhouse, I spent a little time in Hollywood knocking on doors, talking to producers, doing a little bit of show business, but not much. I had a love too much for broadcasting, and I think Gordon probably had a love too much for excitement in the black ops world to really pursue that career the way he wanted. He told me in an interview one time he really wanted to be a director or a producer or a writer, and he was kind of all of that in a way. He's had many projects over his life. Life turned out to be a real-life incarnation of your favorite spy thriller, combined with a little bit of the cheap two-bit world of the PI stories that we read in Pulp Fiction. And for those who knew him up close and personal, he was a man of great social conscience that in his later years he dedicated to his pursuit of free or cheap energy, which he was convinced the U.S. government had back-engineered from UFO crashes. And he laid out a pretty good record of evidence that, at least circumstantially, he was probably right. Many have asked me if foul play was involved. It most certainly could have been a murder, but there's little evidence of that. However, if there is a suspect, it's more likely, in my opinion, to have been from the energy corporations of America and around the world rather than the government. As Gordon was evidently getting very close to the development of free energy, which he envisioned that would be something that would be good for mankind, free the world from the debt of big oil and gas. Others suspect his life was long dedicated to black operations, and maybe we didn't really know all of the facts about Gordon Novell. He did have friendship with CIA agents, and he talked about it frequently to me off the record, as I say. He loved the shadow clandestine operations of the world, and it is true that sometimes these type of people do bite the hand that feeds them when they no longer find them useful. So we can't rule out anything, but I'm inclined to think it was a natural occurrence. And we'll find out more about that as time goes along. Many of those factors could have been involved, but I think it was Gordon's lifestyle. He did live to 74. And he did love hard living, wild women, and various stressful close encounters with law enforcement, military types, and the underworld even. He knew most of them. He knew many of them by their first name. And it could have taken a toll, as that is stressful, even though I know he enjoyed it every minute with every fiber of his body. His body probably had nothing more to give, even though his spirit and drive was that of a young man. In my last conversation with him, it was almost like Gordon Novell was 30 again. Many of the people on my staff over the years never could understand the association I have with Bad Boy Gordon, and I say that affectionately. But once you got past that PI image, there was a small boy-like quality about him that included thinking the best of mankind, something I could identify with. And he knew the people that he knew were dealing with not necessarily always the same intentions he had. Some of them were, frankly, rotten to the core. But even as Gordon and I laughed about that many times talking about things, the magnitude of their devotion could not be questioned. Many of these black operators are very dedicated to God and country. Gordon Lovell was called many names, but as Robert Morningstar dubbed him in an expose on the British Petroleum encounter in the Gulf, where they pretty much screwed up the environment forever, called him Noble Dragon. I believe Gordon liked that term, Noble Dragon. As all of us know far too well, life on this planet for humans, it's temporary. And it was time for Gordon to move on. It leaves one to wonder if there's any eternity for men's souls. And if there is, then you wonder about what Gordon's doing right now. He's probably already shaking up the realm of those on the other side. Gordon, almost until the day he died, kept in touch with certain people in high positions of power. And I'm not talking about just in the United States, but around the world. He knew many people, the players, the black operatives, intelligence agents, male and female. Gordon used to talk to me off the record about his protector at CIA. Who later left that agency for other places to work in the intelligence field because of a moral conviction. I'm talking about Ronald Pandolfi. Pandolfi is somewhat of a mystery man, but we do know some things about him. For instance, reliable information to me suggests that he left the CIA over the questions of WMDs in Iraq. Pandolfi did a finding for the Bush administration early on about the war in Iraq. Before they went to war, he was asked to find out whether or not they had WMDs. We're talking about weapons of mass destruction. And evidently, Pandolfi and his group at the CIA found that Saddam Hussein did not control any WMDs. The Bush administration evidently wasted no time saying that was not the finding they wanted. And rather than compromise its standards, Pandolfi asked to be transferred to another department away from the CIA. But still, he's involved today in highly technical gathering of intelligence and respected by many men in the intelligence world. We asked Pandolfi to come to the show tonight live. But he instead decided just to send me a statement to read. In this statement, which as Grant Cameron pointed out to me, as I showed it to him, since Grant had been investigating the shadowy world for some time, is obviously some sort of coded message. So therefore, I will read it as written, and as Pandolfi submitted it to the Jerry Pippin Show. In respect to secret agents, Pandolfi paying tribute to another man in the shadow world of the secret operations, Gordon Lovell. Let me read this verbatim, what Pandolfi wrote for me to read on the Jerry Pippin Show tonight. It came in an email close to midnight, October 6, 2012. He starts off, he says, I met Gordon at an offbeat place at night where people might meet to have a private conversation and perhaps where only one might walk away. But I had known of Gordon for many years. Well, at least I knew of the shadowy figure that might have been Gordon. We did walk away that night into the shadows. at different times and in different directions, but somewhat in step with the shared vision of accessing the truth and making the world a better place. Gordon's path thereafter was a tangled web with many falls, and there were times when I received or made a call. He loved and respected the princess and served as godfather to Kashmir. He climbed up the mountains, spoke with the wise yak, and butted heads with the blue goat. Gordon was always ready for a fight, ready to win that fight with confidence. He was confident that he was always right. My confidence in a better world, inspired by Gordon during the night, that now, in the shadows, there are more of us meeting tonight. This message came to me over the weekend, as you know, and that was it. But somewhere, somehow, I think in that coded message, we can imagine a meeting of some, for lack of better terms, Cold War spies, someplace in Washington, D.C. in the Beltway area, some of them Gordon's friends, some of them Gordon's associates, and they held their own funeral of sorts for Gordon. What an interesting meeting that must have been, I imagine. If only we could have heard the tributes and the comments, I'm sure they would have been very, very revealing. By the way, the wise yak and the blue goat, obviously decision makers of the highest order, either in the ranks of the CIA, DIA, or perhaps even at the gates, at the heads of state. This country and elsewhere, the reference to the princess, Mrs. Pandorfi, and Gordon, and the grandfather to their son, were also included. A personal salute tonight of the highest order to Gordon Novell. Now it's my pleasure to bring on the line from Thailand, Sir Novell, Gordon's son, and we're going to talk a little bit about Gordon Novell. So, first of all, Sir Novell, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for, it's a very warm introduction. You know, I appreciate it. It's emotional, so, you know, it's going to be tough for me not to get a little emotional in here as well, but, that's what happens when you have a family that passed, you know, so.
That's right. I get a little more emotional than I thought I would. I thought I was a big boy, but.
Yeah, it's not so easy, and it's good to cry, you know. There's no difference in men and women. You can cry. I was looking at your show and, you know, what you guys have done for him in the past and the videos and things, and it makes it easier when your family dies and you see that other people, you know, cared a lot. And so it's going to be a little tough for me to, you know, talk about his stuff, but once we get into the show and stuff, I'll push through it a little bit. But anyway, so, yeah, we're all, a little sad about his passing and things, and we'd all like to have him around for a while longer. I think the one thing, you know, everybody said about him was, they really were entertained by him, you know, and they liked to be around him, to listen to him talk, you know. And you guys recorded a lot of that, and you guys put a lot of that on video. And so I want to say I appreciate that from our family.
Now, did he go over to Thailand to see you recently?
Yeah, he was when he got older, he wasn't so financially secure, and he had a lot of friends help him, you know. And it wasn't because people didn't help him; it was because of his lifestyle and how he grew up and things. And you can make excuses for everybody too, and he wasn't totally responsible, that's for sure. but he was a good guy, you know, at the end of the day. I think most people say that. And, you know, he had some, I think he had a bad start in life and, you know, went down a lot of wrong paths, but I think he got back on the right path. And he liked to, you know, he liked to antagonize people and, you know, cause things to happen. You know, he wasn't the type of guy that wanted to sit around and lay in a bed in the hospital or anything like that, you know. So, you know, his health was bad when he kind of pushed out of here. And, you know, there's a lot of people keeping tabs on him before he went. He wasn't alone or anything. I was calling him regularly in the hospital. And also he had one friend named Bill Amos that, you know, looked out for him quite well. And he had a very nice girlfriend named Nora. And there's several other people, Mike Bigham and Bob Shaheen and Tom Sullivan, and there's Steve Huntsman and many people that like helped him, you know, over the years. That's just a few, and you know, there's many more before that, and he has many old friends, and I'm gonna you know, contact them and whatnot as well, because I know everybody doesn't know. You know, it just happened a few days ago. So anyways, he did pass away. He had bad, you know, he had a heart attack a few years ago, and he also had diabetes very bad, and he had a problem with his foot, and he had his toe amputated recently, and we knew it was going to be a tough fight because it was a serious bacteria, and he also had other health problems, you know, but we all knew he was kind of like Wolverine, and that he was, you know, kind of tough, and that he, you know, would recover, and he did. He did for a while, but I don't think he wanted to lay in the hospital, you know, for too long. And he was in a lot of pain. I read some of his emails and stuff, but that happens when you die. You know, that's what happens. So he definitely, you know, recovered from his surgery and was able to talk. And, you know, many people spoke to him, and everybody got to say what they wanted to say to him if they wanted to, you know, if they really wanted a chance to get a hold of him. And you guys did a great job. Like I said, I'm very impressed with your recordings and, you know, that stuff that we couldn't do from our family. Go ahead.
Have you made a memorial arrangements, or has that already happened? Or?
Yeah, well, that's what I'll tell you a little bit. You know, we're going to have his DNA profile made just because we have some litigation going on with his, you know, his past family history and, you know, with his father. So there's a couple lawsuits pending in his name in New York. And I can talk about those later. But for his, we're going to have an autopsy done as well for medical reasons. We want to, you know, the family history, what the, you know, specific cause of death is. And, you know, you can kind of prevent it, those kind of things, you know, if you're younger. So, you know, genetics plays a part of that. And, you know, then we're going to, he wanted to be cremated, you know. And so we're going to, you know, make sure that he's properly taken care of and everything. And then we're going to have, we're talking about holding a memorial in L.A. for him. We wanted to give his friends and people who helped him in the past a chance to, you know, do whatever they felt they wanted to do. And I'm going to send an email out to, you know, all the people that he was very close with or, you know, emailed a lot with and ask them what they, you know, whether they want to show up and whatnot. Or if they don't, you know, he had a lot of friends spread out across the country and, you know, the world. So all his friends weren't in L.A., but there's a group of people there that loved him and, you know, will probably want to show up, at least a little local group. So we'll do something small, or if, you know, several people want to come out. You know, a lot of people loved him, but, you know, life is, everybody's busy and, you know, everybody's old that know him too. You know, a lot of his friends are old too, so it's not easy to travel and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's not expected from our side, you know. We just want to do something right, and, you know, a lot of people will do a lot of stuff with him online, so.
Yeah. Do you mind telling me a little bit about the lawsuit against Billy Rose or the state or whatever is going on there? I mean, was that, you know, I've always heard that was his father. Was that true?
Yeah, you know, that's exactly what we found. I found that out in 2011, and my mom had sent me an email just randomly and said, "Hey, sir, check this out on this TV show on NBC. It's called The Playboy Club, and your grandfather's on there." And I looked at the video link on, you know, NBC, and there's some little guy on there named Billy Rose that ran bars and, you know, looked Jewish and sounded like he had a New York accent. And I said, you know, but it was based in Chicago, and it was kind of a fictional story, and it ended up failing the series. I guess it wasn't so great. And I went in. I said, "Mom, what is that all about? You know, who's this guy?" And so I went and, you know, Googled his name for the first time in 2011. I you know, we knew we had some grandfather back there, but we didn't know who it was. And we knew that he left some money to Israel. You know, that's all we were told. And, you know, that was pretty much it, you know. And we grew up in Ohio, you know, in a small town and things. So it wasn't the best place, you know, to be anything other than white and Christian and things like that. So not that that's a bad thing either, you know. It's just that's how certain neighborhoods are in small towns, you know. And they like who they are, you know, and that's okay too. So, you know, we grew up not knowing anything about that pretty much. And until 2011, I Googled him and seen his Billy Rose's photos when he's in his 30s. And it was very shocking to me because his face looked very similar to mine. And, you know, I always had this feeling in the back of my mind that there was, you know, something more. I don't know why. Just some, I don't know what you call it, deja vu or whatever. But anyways. So I looked at it, and then I'm like, yeah, that's my grandfather for sure. And then I started digging into the legal history of it and asked my dad and my mom their stories. And they told me, you know, Billy Rose was pretty powerful. He was like Donald Trump back in, you know, the 30s and 40s and 50s. And, you know, he died in his 60s, you know, in the 1960s. And he was, you know, died with $54 million. And, you know, my dad, I guess, was his only child. And, you know, he came of, you know, Billy Rose loved, you know, bars and women and stuff and ran with the New York Mafia and J. Edgar Hoover. And he was a pretty sophisticated business guy. And, you know, he had a really, you know, he was married and was also having an affair with another famous lady. And his wife was also a famous actress when my dad was born. So Billy Rose had a lot at stake. You know, you can understand why people have, you know, make decisions like that.
That probably explains Gordon's fascination with show business all his life. It was in his genes.
Big shoes to fill. He had big shoes to fill, and, you know, he always wanted to, he had a mystery to solve from his birth. You know, he had a very big mystery to solve, and, you know, he got close to it, but, you know, in the 60s, you couldn't prove those kind of things. There's a lot of discrimination against children born out of wedlock legally, similar to African Americans and women. So, you know, it was just, you look at everybody and their selfish pursuits and you can kind of see how it happened. You know, everybody kind of acts in their own interest. You know, some people act in, you know, and to help other people, you know, but, you know, most of the time we, you know, to do what benefits us. And that's what happened. And you had it to the extreme in the case of his family. So he grew up without a father. Only a mother that was, you know, young and scared and was pretty much just a dancer at one of Billy Rose's bars. And, you know, she's an okay person too, but she, you know, she was traumatized by it because of the discrimination against, you know, children born out of wedlock and not being married in the southern United States in the 1930s and things like that. So, you know, he grew up without a father, and, you know, there was a father there that could have been there, you know, but due to kind of cultural and social circumstances, it just didn't happen. And by, you know, and also his father was a very extreme and, you know, extreme personality, you know, genius, but evil and, you know, very connected as well, you know. So he had big shoes to fill, and I think he was always trying to do that by making billions of dollars and things like that. And he could never just, you know, stride along and take it easy, you know. He always had those shoes to fill, and even up until his death. And We filed a couple lawsuits to try and get his estate back and, you know, his father's estate back and also his father's DNA sample. And those are in litigation now, and maybe we win and maybe we don't win. But, you know, he got to read those before he died, and I'm happy about that.
And we need to make certain everybody knows, sir, that you're an attorney of some renown. And you practice now basically and live in the Pacific Rim, but you practice all over the world, I guess.
Yes, I have a good immigration practice, U.S. immigration. You know, even people, you know, hate the U.S. around the world or things, but a lot of people still love it too, you know, and you know, there's a line of people to get in the door. Yes. So that's why the U.S. kind of crazy too, because it's a very high demand. It's the highest demand immigration system, and I kind of seen that coming, you know, after I graduated law school, and I was interested in Asia, and I could see that, you know, I've been playing Asian war games and video games since I was a kid, and always was fascinated by China and Japan and, you know, Indonesia, South, you know, Indochina area. So I ended up over here, you know, as a practicing as attorney for Deloitte Touche for 4 years, and you know, more as a consultant. We don't do real legal practice here, you know, not in the courts like that. I didn't want to do that stuff. I don't like litigation and domestic, you know, bankruptcies, divorces, things like that. It's too much drama. Yeah, right. I like stable.
Let's talk a little bit, if we can, about your dad's connection to UFOs. That's how I met him originally.
Sure.
What do you know about your dad and UFOs?
You want to hear my take on, you know, what he knew and, you know, what, you know, just as, you know, just to be blunt, he always liked to use that word, I'll be blunt with you, and he didn't like to pull punches and things like that. So, you know, I'll tell you what I know about that kind of stuff and what my, you know, thoughts are. They differ from his, you know, I think, you know, just because of where he was born and, you know, the time and place he grew up and, you know, the difference in, you know, technologies and things like that. So, you know, he loved UFOs, you know, he's been fascinated by them for decades. So, you know, before other people were fascinated in them, he was fascinated in them. It's he also was, you know, trying to build the iPhone 20 years ago too. You know, he just could never get the financing, and you know, also there's a lot.
He's quite a technical guy. The first time I met him, he was wired. I mean, he had one of those. He had something in his earplug, and he was always doing two or three things at the same time, and seemed to be able to handle it pretty well. And most of the things he was talking about were connected to UFOs and energy. But did he ever have a UFO experience, you think, himself, or he just was fascinated by it?
I think he was fascinated by him. Again, Dad's story is he grew up, you know, with a mystery, like, who's your father? So he had to solve that, you know. And, you know, and he was, and I think that's kind of why he became an investigator, because that's what he was naturally good at as a, you know, out of his childhood.
Let's talk a little bit about Gordon and the CIA. What do you know about that?
Basically with the CIA, his main connection there is the guy you already mentioned with the, you know, with the monologue that you read.
Dorothy. Yeah, right.
He's a very nice guy. You know, I've talked with him, you know, not met him or anything. He's kind of like Charlie's Angels or something, but he's a nice guy. And, he loved my dad, you know, and basically, you know, my dad, I don't think was so, you know, working on the payroll of the CIA or anything like that. But, you know, he knew Ron, and Ron was connected to him, whether it's, you know, as a friend or, you know, a lot more. So that's the truth about Ron and my dad. I know Ron, you know, cared for my dad.
Yes, that's true. And I think in that coded message he gave, it came through even that he cared very much for your dad.
He has a way with words. You know, he writes differently than everybody else I've talked to. Ron's a little bit special, you could tell, with his writing style.
Yeah, I understand. And Gordon knew all those guys, Kit Green, and I don't know about Jack Safrati and him. They seem to have a love-hate relationship. But they always managed to send me pictures of them out having an expensive dinner with lots of people around.
That's for sure. You know, I think Dad was kind of one of the gurus of, you know, UFOs and stuff on the internet. And as far, you know, there's a lot of people that want to be that guy, you know, because it's a great mystery.
You know, sir, my impression of your father was he was a very intelligent fellow. He grasped things. While he lacked in formal education, he grasped he could take the argument on physics or whatever to anybody.
Yes. There's no doubt he had a sharp mind. I think everybody agrees on that. And, you know, but at the same time, he was, they call him black and white, and there's no gray in between, really, you know. He's just that style of personality, and a lot, that's why people loved him, but that's why they hated him, too. So, you know, it's just that style. There's one of those no in between and kind of extreme characters. His father was very much like that as well, and they had the same habits about bumming cigarettes off of people and, you know, eating sweets all the time. And, you know, they both died of the same thing. They got leg bacteria infections in their legs and couldn't walk and were hospitalized. And same story, you know.
Yeah, you know, We have an interview with him where he talks a little bit about Watergate, but he didn't go into great detail about it. Did he ever talk to you about that, his experience of Watergate and what the connection was?
Yeah, I mean, he talked to me about all that stuff, you know, Watergate and JFK and UFOs and CIA and all his friends, and, you know, he kept me up to date. And, you know, I don't think there's a super huge secret out there. You know, everybody says we want disclosure. I think you've already gotten it. You know, I mean, if we're all talking about it, we already know about it. It's not 1900 anymore, you know, but it's not out. It's a dangerous technology, I think, what these guys are playing with. It's like, it's more powerful than nuclear weapons by far. And, you know, and that's what they were, you know, tinkering with. Maybe they didn't have it in their hand to play with it, but they had the idea in their mind, you know, and that's the most dangerous thing is the idea itself. You know, it's like the nuclear weapon. It changes history, you know, and also you don't know what we're all here for anyways. You know, we could be here for a vacation and to chill out, and we don't need that stuff. Also, you know, a lot of people say, you know, oil and gas and this and that, but, you know, history progresses, and I see the government as, you know, we're getting better. We got computers and internet and phone, and yeah, it might not be as fast as everybody want clean energy and things like that, but who knows what's going on. You know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of theories, and that's what they are, theories. So he was very on the edge of UFO technology. I don't think he could have built it due to the financing. It's very, very expensive. You look at an automobile factory, it's very huge, and, you know, and mm-hmm. he wanted to do it on a small budget, and I don't think anybody could take that so serious, but I think a lot of people knew he had the right idea, you know, and that's where him and Jack Sarfatti and Pandolfi and Kit Green and Pal Putoff and all those guys came together, is because they all kind of had the same idea, although they had differing points of view on how it worked and things like that, but they all pretty much knew what the same, they're all talking about the same thing, I think.
You know, he knew some pretty famous people. He was connected to John DeLorean and Larry Flint. And, I mean, tell me a little bit about those relationships, if you know anything about those.
Sure. We met John DeLorean a lot as kids. He's a business guy. You know, he ran corporations and built a car that was, you know, going to, you know, possibly kick the crap out of everybody else a bit, you know, on its mileage. And, you know, there a lot of people have conspiracies about John DeLorean, but he was in trouble. You know, he got himself in trouble with the wrong people, whether it was good or bad people, you don't know. You know, if he could have been the good guy or they could have been, you don't know. My dad helped him when he was in trouble, definitely helped him when he was in the court cases. And, you know, we had dinner out at John DeLorean's house and met him several times in different places around the country. And, you know, Mike, you know, we knew his wife and kids, you know, a little bit. We met mm-hmm. them. You know, not enough to be real close to them, but they knew us and we knew them and we knew, you know.
Yeah, right. So he worked as a private investigator for them, probably.
Said that Don DeLorean was framed, you know, and that he played, you know, they were playing dirty tricks and that Dad was one of the dirty trick guys that were for hire, you know, just like a, you know, kind of an agent or whatever. And, you know, he said that he played some dirty tricks back on them and that the right thing happened in the end, you know, and that's what matters a lot of times. And, you know, people lose sight of what they're doing, the means of what they're doing to get to an end. And, you know, if you're going to lose sight of that and you're going to wear, you know, the color of law, then, you know, you better be ready for other people to do that back to you. So as long as everybody plays by the same rules, that's fine. My dad just didn't believe that a lot of times everybody would follow the rules and play by them. So he would throw out the book sometimes, you know.
Well, right. It takes sometimes, you got to do the same thing that the people are doing to you, you know, unfortunately. Michael Jackson, he was connected to him some way or another. What was that? Was that the same sort of kind of client relationship?
Yeah, Dad became kind of famous during DeLorean and Larry Flint's cases. We had dinner at Larry Flint's house one time with him as well and met him and things. And, you know, his house was quite, you know, a shocker out in L.A. with, you know, women hanging out there and things. And we were kids, but, you know, we seen things in his basement and things like that. And, you know, Dad got a reputation for being able to be a fixer, you know, in tough situations for, you know, kind of like celebrity people. And I think he had a reputation from his JFK and Watergate stuff with keeping his mouth shut, you know, and on certain things. You know, he had a big mouth, too. There's no doubt about that. But he kept his mouth shut when it was important, you know, and when things were on the line, and I think he got a
reputation. Yeah, I mean, he certainly did know how to keep a secret, despite the fact that he would talk a lot. I mean, for instance, we still don't know anything about JFK other than the fact that he did pretty well play some dirty tricks on Garrison down in New Orleans. Your dad told me he was working for the White House at that time, and Garrison thought he was working for the CIA.
Sure. I don't think he
did. Did he ever say much to you about that early experiences?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing is I grew up around my dad. I knew him for 37 years, and that's one of his big stories. That's kind of where he cut his teeth is that JFK thing. And, you know, you got to just look at the facts of it. And, you know, I don't think it's something that people haven't figured out. A lot of people love conspiracy because it's just continuous questions and, you know, debate. But, you know, the JFK thing to me is a huge mystery. And, you know, there's a lot of people always ask me, did you ever talk to your dad about JFK or this or that? And, you know, yeah, I did, you know, 4 years ago. You know, he came to Thailand and we sat down and, you know, I knew he wasn't going to live a long time. He was 69, but he was kicking around quite good, and, you know, he was bumping around Bangkok and smile on his face and, you know, enjoying the Thai people because they're very friendly. And, you know, the food and weather here is good as well. So, you know, he told me those details and things like that, what he knew. I think there was a certain level of protection that he didn't want me to know every exact thing, you know, like you wouldn't tell your son, you know, the details of your sex life or things like that, you know, the specific things. And, you know, all this or that. So he did tell me, you know, what happened, and he left me, you know, items on JFK, and he left a lot of files, and I knew his story. I knew him growing up. I knew his body language. I knew when he was, you know, showing off and exaggerating. I knew when he was telling the truth. You know, if you look at the facts, you know, and you want to go through that, you know, I can take you through the facts of that and tell you what I think as, you know, one of the people. I think that he was a very young man, you know, at that time. You have to look at his age to start out when that happened. You know, he wasn't very old. He was in his 20s. And, you know, a lot of people say, Gordon knew what was going on, you know, because I think he got his face was placed in the scene and things like that. He was placed, you know, he was young and stupid, and that's why they used him, you know, and used him for that. But he ended up being very successful in that. And, you know, a lot of people have placed him at the scene of the assassination. You know, they think that he's the Umbrella Man. And, you know, there are very, you know, similar resemblances to him and the Umbrella Man. I don't think he pulled the trigger or was involved in, you know, the big plotting or planning.
Yeah, we're not, even if he were the Umbrella Man, we don't know what he was signaling and who to. Maybe you do.
No, I think he was, you know, the facts are that Dad was, an operative for the CIA at that time, as far as I can tell. He was running ammunition to the Cuban, anti-Cuban Castro people. You know, and he had, you know, here's what people, you know, I'll tell you what his friends would say, and this is a guy, I think Stephen Huntsman, you know, he said, you know, Dad had, nobody had the testicular fortitude of him or something like that. You know, he was pretty gutsy, and that's what his father used to always said, if you have some brass, you can get a real far in life. So, you know, you just do things and make things happen, and, you know, a lot of people will stay on the sidelines and, you know, sit back, and, you know, that's the safe route, you know. But he liked to go to take the path of, you know, and that's what he was doing as a young man. He didn't have a lot of family support to guide him in different directions, and I think he got in with a rough crowd in New Orleans. He grew up on the streets. He knew the, you know, mobsters down there, and, you know, I think he wanted to be more than that, and, you know, he probably got in with, you know, some of the people who knew the mob, the CIA guys and the Cubans and anti-Cubans, and, you know, there was a lot of money going on in Cuba back and forth with gambling and alcohol and things like that at that time, and, you know, there's a control games being played on both sides, and I think a lot of people got killed in the Bay of Pigs, you know, CIA people. I really do. I think that's my opinion, and, you know, I think that my dad was connected to the CIA. He was connected to the mob, and, you know, there, you know, his face is on the, you know, possibly on the scene, and there was a Cuban guy sitting next to him, and, you know, a lot of CIA people got killed, and they looked stupid in the Bay of Pigs, and, you know, Kennedy was, you know, they pointed the finger at him, kind of. And whether they did it or not, I don't think it was the CIA, like, hey, we kill Kennedy. You know, I think it was some people that were pissed, that were, you know, politically, you know, you can see as politics are in the United States now, how divided they are, you know, to the extreme, you know, in those days, because there wasn't the technology of information to get out there and educate people. So, you know, and that event turned the tide of history. You know, it's similar to 9/11, you know. So I don't know what my dad, you know, he never said, I, you know, you know, he hated JFK or anything like that. But, you know,
he never talked bad about JFK, and it's inner politics to me. He seemed like he would be, you know, pretty friendly to the JFK. But as you say, he was a young man at that time.
Yeah, he was, you know, to the right on his politics. And, you know, it's easy to get young people, you know, wrapped up in politics and say, this is how things are, this is the answer, and you do this. And he was gutsy, you know, and I don't think, you know, if he was involved in that, that he knew, you know, the top people. I think that he was down at the bottom, and he knew, you know, the next people along the chain that could have got you up to the top. But, you know, I think also that he could have been at the scene, and he also, you know, then went, and he's gutsy enough to go in and work for Garrison, you know, in his office, and know what he, you know, that's the style of things that my dad would.
And even though he didn't care for Garrison, he liked that idea that he was a double agent with Garrison. He's brought that up to me several times.
He got up to Ohio after that. You know, I don't know what happened, but he had some people backing him for sure, you know, to keep him out of trouble on that one, because he was hot. And he got nailed later. You know, he got nailed by, you know, he was put in federal prison and things like that. And, you know, kind of sad stories on some silly things, you know. But, you know, also he's the crazy kind of guy too, you know. And that's, like I said, if you don't sit on the sidelines, that's what happens to you sometimes, you know. So he took his lumps. So with JFK, I think that's just an unfortunate politics getting too extreme and, you know, and also people being used, and I think a lot of CIA agents got probably killed in the bad pigs, and, you know, I think history shows what it is. I think people have figured it out pretty much now what it's been, but just nobody.
I know when he you know, worked for Ramsey Clark a little bit as a private investigator there, and the lawsuits, they had to go, they couldn't go criminally because the judge down in Waco was the one that ordered the whole incident happening, so and they ended up having to be in that courthouse. He and Ramsey Clark go back quite a ways.
Yeah, I've known. Yeah, Ramsey was his. Basically, Ramsey knew about, you know, that he was his father was on the Supreme Court, Tom Clark, and you know, Ramsey ended up becoming also the Attorney General. So very, you know, and Ramsey's a general, sweet guy. He loved my dad, you know, and I think everybody knows Ramsey's personality, you know, other than, you know, political people don't like him probably, but if anybody who met him probably likes him. So my dad worked in Waco, and, you know, my dad took off away from our family a little bit to do that, and, you know, I always kind of regretted that he did that, but at the same time, he made very valuable connections that, you know, that are invaluable today, and I don't regret it at all, you know. But, you know, when you're a kid growing up, you're like, in high school, you're like, Dad, why are you out doing this thing, like this on TV or, and, you know, he's telling us that, you know, these people were murdered, and, you know, he's to the extreme, you know, the Branch Davidians, I don't think were real sweet, nice, great people, you know, that were neighborly and things like that. They were it to themselves, and they were kind of strange, but, you know, that's part of freedom too. You know, you got to deal with your neighbors and let them, you know, have their long hair or whatever they're smoking next door, or you drink your thing or whatever, you know. Freedom is freedom. It's not my freedom, and you don't get to do your thing. You know, it's just everybody gets to do their thing. Don't hurt me, pretty much, you know. So Ramsey's a guy. Ramsey believes in, you know, freedom and you know, legal things. He's seen the good, the bad, the ugly, you know, and Ramsey's become, you know, kind of a walking saint is what everybody kind of says about him. And, you know, Ramsey will pick up our phone calls, and my dad spoke to him, and my dad used Ramsey's name a lot when it shouldn't have been used, and same as with Ron Pandolfi, and everybody's name my dad would throw out there like he owned it, you know. But, you know, they didn't do that, and they were able to deal with that, you know, and they accepted that even though they probably didn't like it, you know, and they weren't involved in all his things every second of the time, and they weren't on, you know, this or that. But, you know, they knew him. They loved him. They were definitely connected to him. He worked for Ramsey.
Did he ever convince you about UFOs one way or the other?
Sure. UFOs are, I think, obvious to people that aren't, you know, kind of opiated their mind on some other, you know, philosophy is what I would call it, not really religion. You know, UFOs, you look to the stars and you can see, you know, we're not sitting here alone. If the sky was black, you could make the argument there was no UFOs, but there's twinkles in the star, you know, and you can see that. And, you know, it's also, you know, if you believe the story about UFOs that, you know, that you can travel to other places, you know, and it plays with time. You know, there's definitely, I think, you know, Einstein and all the physicists, and they all back that up. You know, it plays with time. And the question is do you want to play with time? For example, you see a football game that you already know the score. How boring is that, you know, or something you already know right. that it's not fun to watch. So I think that's
you could clean up in Vegas some sports books. And the stock market as well, and a few other things. Sir, is it something we're trying to Sir Novell here, the son of Gordon Novell. Is there something before we wrap this up that you'd like to get out to the audience? I've pretty well dominated the questions here.
No, it was a little bit mushy in the beginning, and I apologize for that, but I think people can understand that.
Well, I didn't know if I was going to make it through the monologue even. So we're not alone.
No, it's good to cry. It's definitely good to cry. I think it washes something away. It's symbolic and things like that. And, you know, you go through some tissues. It's good for the economy and things like that as well. So, the thing about my dad, you know, I would apologize to all the people he brushed, the wrong way. He was like that, and his personality wasn't soft. And I would apologize to all the people, people loved him too. And they, you know, he'll be probably one of those people that are understood better, you know, 50 or 100 years from now, or maybe even 200 or whatever. But, you know, he's one of those people. He got his profiles up on Wikipedia, and he's on the internet, and he has some nice litigation, you know, pending to a very big mystery. You know, he was kind of like the robber baron of conspiracy. You know, he loved conspiracies. If his socks were missing, the CIA stole them, or the FBI, and. But at the same time, there was a lot of that stuff going on with him, you know. So there was a lot of, I'll tell you the same thing with his father is, you know, nobody knew what he did at the end with who or whether he's telling the truth about this or that. There's a bunch of stories about his dad, you know, Billy Rose, Manhattan Primitive, The Nine Lives of Billy Rose, and some other books about Billy Rose. But if you know dad and you know his story, you pick up those books, and it's about reading the same character over again, but, you know, on a different level. Billy Rose, you know, was a cold heart, you know, kind of a cold hearted person. And my dad had a warm heart, you know, and he had kids and, you know, he didn't leave.
Your dad, Gordon Novell, could take care of himself, but he was actually a man of, he was a teddy bear in many ways, but he could certainly defend himself if he had to.
Why nobody feels sorry for him all the time. Like, you can cry and then you can stop crying because he had that hard side, and you can say, hey, that's why, you know, this has happened to you. Why don't you change this? But, you know, he didn't have a good, you know, social structure growing up and stuff, and he went down the wrong path, but he got back on the right path, and I think that's why he has so many friends like Ramsey and Bob Shaheen and, you know, David Michael and Michael Jackson and those kind of people. And, you know, there's a list of people you can name, Steven Seagal, Larry Flynt, John DeLorean, all those kind of people. But, you know.
And that must have been did you meet Steven Seagal yourself?
No, but Dad would, you know, got an autograph.
Yeah, I mean, because you enjoy karate and things like that, if I understand that correctly, from your dad.
Paul's an interesting character. You know, he's got his character flaws, too. I think we can see that. But he looks like a pretty good-hearted guy, and, you know, he's into MMA now and stuff, and that's a very neat sport and things like that. So, Dad, he had a problem, same as Michael Jackson. He had some mobsters and things. And Steven Seagal, you know, he's a tough guy, you know, no doubt about it. But, when it comes to banging bullets and things like that and black ops, you know, I think, you know, Steven Seagal was a normal person, too, and he didn't have those kind of wires, and he was out looking for those kind of wires. And, you know, he found my dad, and him and my dad did some business, and he definitely gave me an autographed photo of Steven Seagal, which I still have. And, you know, I see Steven Seagal in it, you know, fight. So it's interesting. You know, he had a lot of interesting friends I met, you know, Larry Flynt and those guys and people, you know, people you wouldn't normally meet. And we traveled to a lot of places with my dad and did interesting things and, you know, heard a lot of good stories over the years and stuff. But, you know, but he also had his flaws, too. You know, he wasn't, you know, the everything to everyone. So, but a lot of people loved him, so that's fine.
Yeah. What time is it there in Thailand?
It's about 7 a.m. That's what's kind of
new. So we got you up early, huh? We appreciate you coming on.
Appreciate
you. Got any closing thoughts?
again, I want to say thank you for recording all his videos and things on the web, you guys' website and recordings. We didn't have that in our family. We weren't able to do that stuff for him because, you know, just the emotional baggage we had with him. But we all loved him and things. And we thank you guys for recording his thoughts and things because a lot of people might want to listen to those in the future. And even if they don't, you know, you still made him feel very good about himself. And you guys are quite nice people. And I appreciate you, you know, letting me come on here as well and putting these things on the internet. Internet will be here for a long time, I hope.
Yeah, it'll be there for a long time, I'm sure. Thanks very much, Sir Novell. We'll be in contact with you.
Sure.
And we hope that Gordon's pursuit of free energy and low-priced energy from the UFOs, I hope that continues, that sort of research.
Yeah, there's a... I think there's a group of people. Dad was a little bit of a wild guy, and you know, if he had that technology and had $100 million in the bank to back it up, it could have been dangerous. Who knows? You know, and they say you can control time, and time's already set, and things like that. And, but if that's the truth, then that's the truth. And there's more responsible people on the planet than Dad to have that. But he knew the ideas, and he wanted to make it free, which is kind of what our idea of our country is, and what we all kind of believe in. He wanted it to be free, and he didn't believe people should have to slave around for gas and things like that. And you look at it objectively, and it's true. We shouldn't have to do all that stuff. But also it's reality. We have to move from place to place. We have to eat. People are always going to have to work on this planet to, somebody's always, until we get very sophisticated, almost magical, people are going to have to work. And, maybe that's what we're here for a little bit, is, just to relax. And, everybody isn't dealt a fair hand on this planet, that's for sure. And, I think that's what he was trying to do, is get everybody dealt a fair hand, so that, if you wanted to do this or that, or if you want to get off this planet, you could get out of here, So, that's his idea, And he left behind a lot of plans and CDs and writings and stuff about that. And I don't think there's anybody out to steal that from him and this or that. It could be like a nuclear weapon. It's dangerous. But, at the end of the day, it'll come out, it just takes a little while. And a lot of times, the technology doesn't come out until it's under control and we understand it. It's like you don't release something on society, that could potentially destroy everybody, until you got a pretty good grasp of it. It's just not responsible. And, that's kind of the thing. But also, it's not responsible to pollute the planet and things like that. But it's a big planet. There's a lot of water and plants and things here, and we don't understand it either. So he didn't understand everything, but he had I think a lot of people knew that he knew more than the rest. There's a lot of people like are fatty and things like that, and how put off people like real scientists, Kirk Hawkins or that, those kind of people. And they know a lot. I met those people and those are real scientists. My dad was an investigator and he brought them, information, that they could use for their own pursuits. And they did the same for him. And they, it's like the internet. They're all trading information. I don't think any one of them's got it built yet, except maybe, the people out in the desert or whatever. And, there's a lot of stuff out in the air, that's for sure. And, our military keeps things secret, but there's reasons for that. Everybody thinks it's dark and evil, but a lot of times a lot of people are good, There's a lot of people that are good on the planet, more than so than bad. Otherwise, we'd all be killing each other. And a lot of people, and when the time is right, those kind of things will come out. And, you want to make sure that everybody gets to live their life too, and have their freedoms down here as well, even though it's not perfect. So we'll see what happens, is what I would tell you.
Okay, we're going to have to move on. Life moves on. Gordon Norvell, I think this entire hour has been very educational about him. He's been an interesting person, an interesting man, and I appreciate you coming on, sir, talking about your father.
I appreciate you letting me come on and talk.
Okay, thank you very much. This is Jerry Pippin. This has been a salute to Gordon Norvell, 1938 to 2012.